For October the 10th, 2014, we talk about the missed television show, Destiny, and we ask you about clans and guilds. Welcome to the 78th level. My name's Cole Ross.
I'm David Meismith.
I'm Dennis Guyden.
I'm Ben Merkel.
You understand that if you make a joke out of your name, people like that's so people can associate your voice with your name.
Well, I know, but it was at Dennis's suggestion that I be Dennis Guyden.
Oh, okay, cool.
I'm Dennis Guyden.
We honor the wishes of those who are not here.
Wow, you make that sound so dramatic.
Well, it's not here right now. It's
like... Okay, fine. Well, if they can't tell by the fact that I'm the only female on here, my name is Jala. I'm the female that pops up every once in a while.
Yeah.
Hi,
and welcome to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. I don't have any banter for the beginning, you guys.
Bummer.
That's okay. Yeah. You're out of gas.
I said my name weird at the beginning because somebody misspelled my name on a receipt, but that is not good story material. Like, it's good tweet material, not good story material. So,
good story material in 143 characters or less.
I know, right? Really, just force it, you know, creativity thrives within constraints, okay?
Oh, I have a short little anecdote.
Go.
After the Duck Feed Live, Murph was talking about, anybody can talk to me. I will talk to anybody. Mm-hmm. And he had friended me a long time ago, and he never talked to me. So as soon as you guys were done recording, I messaged him on Steam, and I'm like, so talk to me. So then we started playing games and stuff, but I renamed him and Jeffrey Lawton. And so they are Hate Smurf and Honey Badger now.
Okay.
So the moral of the story is, if you communicate with us, we will stalk you.
Yes, and we will also change your name.
Well, okay, the reason why is because on Duck Feed Live, mm-hmm. he kept on getting punted off Google, so I was sitting there mumbling to myself, and I'm like, Google hates Murf.
Mm-hmm.
Hates Murf. Hates Murf!
He's there we
hates
go. Murf.
Yeah. And then I was talking to Giola at the same time, because we all played Velvet Sundown together, and... Mm-hmm. He just had zero reaction to anything ever, and he's so laid back and deadpan that I just laugh. I laugh endlessly because I'm very energetic, and he's just like, yeah. So he does. Honey Badger don't care.
Yeah. Okay.
Did he end up being the killer?
Spoilers. I don't remember. It wasn't me.
To watch that.
Right.
Yeah. Now that's okay. So here's my question. If anybody can recommend something better than Google Hangouts for those live shows that is not Twitch, let me know. because Google Hangouts just kicks
Google
people off.
Google Hangouts is pretty awesome.
Like, I love the features and they keep adding new weird stuff, but they don't actually do what I need them to do, which is make it work, like, say, 70% of the time.
Are you guys doing video or just audio?
Well, we're doing video for the Patreon backers.
Okay.
I don't know. I can't speak about the particular functions you guys are using, but overall, I have considerably less problems with Google Hangout than I do with Skype.
that's the case. Well, we use Skype for the shows because of the audio compression. Like, it is consistently the least compressed sounding thing we've tried out. And somehow you just got me to say something nice about. Something nice about Skype, and so I feel like I've died just a little bit inside, having said that.
Cole, I have to offset your gloominess, because, Duck Feed Live, you're like, this is a depressing question. Damn it, I'm talking about the future and happiness and, like, what you're planning to do, and you're just like, depression. And then Gary's like, depression, and the only one who's like a ray of light is Hate Smurf.
Hate Smurf, the ray of light. Yeah. No, I just, I've been in a mood, and it's fall. The leaves, they are changing. Man, I kind of hate me for saying that now too.
That was Bob Dylan's original song. Yeah,
yeah. He was originally a Rafi style children's entertainer that wrote songs about the seasons and brushing your teeth regularly.
You brush your teeth.
Oh man, I was there were probably six different parody lyrics I could have fired off there with, like, in a bad Bob Dylan voice, but I decide like I instantly vetoed all of them at once.
Oh,
it's like a bad idea revolver. Just chambers are empty.
Rushing roulette.
What'd you say?
Rushing roulette.
I thought you said crushing roulette. It was like, huh. So that was weird. This episode's, I don't know, there's a strange energy tonight. Let's see how it plays out as we talk about.
It's a NyQuil induced energy. Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's true. Yeah. I don't know. I got home from work today and I felt like I had no energy. So I just laid down and watched a couple of episodes of King of the Hill.
Never a bad choice. But
I know, right? Love King of the Hill. I think I'm watching it specifically because Murph was saying he didn't understand the appeal. And by saying that, he, man, anybody who hasn't listened to that episode of Duck Feed Life, that's coming out in like a week, don't worry, does not understand his disdain for King of the Hill and anything having to do with the South. But King of the Hill, a good show. Yeah. But yeah, it's going to be a weird show today as we talk about news, as we talk about multiplayer guilds, and as we round out with things that we've been playing over the past week. So why don't we jump to it? It's time for the brief where we talk about things that are happening in the world around us. Does anybody have a story they want to volunteer?
Sure, I've got some ammunition.
Okay.
So Ian Milham, who's apparently creative director at Visceral Games, who is apparently making Battlefield Hardline, got a question and in a interview and has officially come out and said that Battlefield Hardline is going to work at launch.
Oh, good for them!
Hooray! Yeah. Golf clap.
Yeah. You know, I'm so happy they were able to fit that into their roadmap 1.0 boots. Huh. I saw that too, and it was a very sad moment, I guess. Do you have any more details you want to share about this?
No. I feel bad kind of like always railing on some of these particularly a company that isn't actually EA, but is kind of bought by EA. I kind of feel bad, but at the same time, it is kind of telling that that's like an issue to the point where not only is that a question you need to answer, but also it's news when you do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Whew, I don't know. Like, I'm not sure if that says anything, if it says more about the news media talking about games, or if it says more about just kind of the state of things, because that is a little surprising, right? Like, I remember hearing some people raise questions and like saying like, huh, Destiny works when it came out.
Oh yeah, like I tend to read Joystick. I know, I think I picked that up from, that used to be like our go-to for links back when we were DTR or something. But, mm-hmm. like, they still are having, like, a weekly, like, column of, are the servers up?
Yeah. Well, that's every site that I look at. Like, that isn't something explicitly good, like Rock, Paper, Shotgun. Like, if it is a mainstream news blog, like either that or Kotaku or Polygon, like, they write about Destiny, like, way too much. And sure. Usually it's, like, the status, like, state of the thing, which... I don't know. That seems to me to be breaking from coverage of a thing that's relevant to a commercial for a thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I feel like on this, I would say if I were going to make a serious point about this, I would feel like I'd say a legitimate problem is that game companies often do sell straight up crap games, you know, do things that are... corporately questionable, or whatever you want to say it, commercially questionable, and can basically get away with it, which is a problem.
Yeah. Well, it's a day one patch. Well, I'd rather have them than not have them, but boy, I'd really rather they design them to work. Go ahead, Joel.
Well, I was just going to say, Cole, that with a lot of games just basically being sold in the alpha stage and beta stage and everything, everybody at this point is more or less so trained to expect that a game's not going to work when it's released, or even, you know, released officially or quasi-released in one of these different forms. I guess, I don't know, it's kind of interesting because I was thinking about it, and it's perfectly acceptable for indies to be half-released like that, but then, you know, larger companies, we still hold to this different standard because they are larger companies.
Yeah. I think that at issue here, it's kind of crazy that EA is charging $60 for this and putting it in a box. Like, yeah, if it was explicitly early access, like, I don't know, like, was it DayZ? Yeah, DayZ, there we go. If it was something like that where, like, yeah, you know, mea culpa, caveat emptor. But the fact that it's being put in a box and being sold in stores that smell like Chinese food and feet really is, I think, what makes this different.
Right, and I feel like there's a difference between, like, you know, it can look like different things. You know, there's a difference between, like, say, like, your average MMO or even like a say like a Minecraft, where like it maybe starts out all right and has to grow into its own, or even a game that's buggy at launch versus like EA's past several games, which were literally you cannot play, period.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like that's a major difference.
Yeah. I don't know, Ben, how do you feel?
I like games to work when I buy them. So
that's a revolutionary idea, Ben.
Such a picky gamer.
That's a strong point, Ben. Yeah. Are you afraid that saying that might upset some of our viewers?
Yeah, don't email me.
I know it can alienate some of the listeners, but I'm taking a stand on this one, guys.
Oh man, I'll throw in a story. Let's see here. Yeah, so yesterday, as of the time of recording, I got some of the best news that I've gotten in a couple of months vis-a-vis any kind of media, which is that they are bringing Twin Peaks back.
Yep, I saw that.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I am so, like, just glowing. Oh, yeah. I can't gush about that. But, you know, I can't be too happy for too long. that is just the way things shake out, and as one TV announcement delights me and, you know, surprises me in a way that says, you know what, maybe something good can exist, and, you know, like this, like the best thing will rise. I see a news story today that says the creators of Myst want to turn it into a television series that will possibly have it'll be a compelling TV drama that will transform Myst into a true transmedia franchise that might include tablet support and tie-in video games.
Great, you've just given me a headache.
Fucking, fucking, God damn
it! Could have been reality TV.
Also, yeah, also, it's Puzzle Island.
There's no more Saturday morning cartoons. Those also went away.
They're all this now? I don't understand. How is that apropos?
No, they're, well, that has, that, it's just talking about TV in general.
Oh, yeah.
And stuff and old stuff and times they are a changing.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, cause that takes, I don't know that you could capture what makes Miss special in a fucking TV show.
Nope.
Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. I could see some reality TV of that I'd like. Like, you know, put people on a deserted island and, like, lock the food behind some door and be like, oh, you can't get in until you learn a base 24 number system by observation.
but it's going to be scripted. And so I like the young adult novels that came out from the Myst series. Like, those are really good, I think. The last one's a little nuts, but, like, in general, I think that they're great, and I love the Myst story, but, like, it's not about something you can depict, I don't know, visually.
Yeah.
I don't know how they're going to translate, like, the feeling of isolation of the game to a TV show, you know.
That's the big thing, I think. That, and the series doesn't have a, except for except for some moments in 3 and some moments in 5, they don't really have a huge, let's say, reputation for having good acting in the games.
Yeah.
So,
well, at least that's something they'll be able to stay true to.
Yeah. I don't know. So, go ahead.
Well, I wanted to comment on the other thing. Something I've noticed about myself is I apparently have some sort of weird connection to the media cosmos. I often pick up media at apropos times without necessarily realizing it. So over the weekend, I tried to get back into Twin Peaks.
Okay.
I have to say, at what point does this become just not people... people just exchanging like incredibly poorly written dialogue?
I mean, I can't say when will you start liking a thing.
does it take some time to get up to like right now? I can't figure out what the point of it is, if that makes sense. Like, It seems like it's trying to be sort of a police procedural that's just not really proceeding.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit what it is. So, like, it's taking off on, like, procedurals, because I think that's what Mark Frost kind of came in from, and soap operas. Like, it's trying to be a little bit of both of those, but with this supernatural element and kind of, like, you know, the Lynchian thing of a small town with all of its deep, dark secrets inside of it. Like,
I guess, to be fair, I'm 4 hours in. I haven't seen anything supernatural. So maybe that's part of what kind of confused me.
Yeah. And, like, honestly, it's a lot of... Welcome to the Twin Peaks cast. it's not so much, you know, about the way things move along. It's more about the kind of the denizens of the town and how they interact with each other. Right. Okay. So, like, what I would say, like, you should know what the show is about from the pilot. Like, it's about trying to solve the, you know, the murder of this young girl and looking at the way that it affects everybody in the town, you know, everybody that we see at least. And kind of the, you know, the antagonistic relationship between everybody and, like, what's going on in the town itself.
I don't want to come across as, like, incredibly negative, but I'm going to anyways. I feel like this is probably intentional, but I feel like the way the dialogue and the characters are written, they all come across to me like they have some sort of severe head trauma, to the point where I can't read any of the interactions, if that makes sense. Like, I can't tell any of the interactions just because I can't tell what's supposed to be character traits and what's just the really weird way that it's written. That's just me.
I kind of don't know what you're picking up on. I mean, like, yeah, there is, like, a little bit of otherworldliness to it, and there's, you know, just it gets bizarre the way some people act. But I think that's kind of a part of a charm. If I'm thinking of the same thing that you're thinking of.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of the characters do some, like, non sequitur dialogue, and it's just in the middle of, like, conversation.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And I can't figure out if that's supposed to be, like, you know, this is a character trait, or this is just a weird way they decided to write this. Does that make sense?
It could be either. Like, honestly, depending on who they are. And, you know, there's a certain style to the way everybody kind of acts. Like, my suggestion to you would just be, like, for right now, just focus on Coop's storyline.
Which one's Coop? Sorry, I'm horrible with names.
That's both Dale Cooper, the agent, Kyle MacLachlan.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. Like you treat him as the centerpiece. The B plots are always really good. Just decide who you're interested in, and then if something happens that you don't like, oh, like, wait a minute, I wasn't really paying attention to that person, go back and read, like, what happened previously in their storyline. Like, if you're looking for something to, like, carry you through, that would be a way to go through it.
Sure.
Huh. So, Cole, are you optimistic about the new Twin Peaks?
Yeah.
Okay. But you're pessimistic about the new Myst. Well,
yeah. I guess what I really want is just another Myst game, and I guess we're getting one by way of this transmedia experience, which is my least favorite phrase. Fuck you.
Yeah.
So the Myst games are some of my favorite games in the world. Like Riven is fantastic, but I don't know. It kind of seems like they're selling out, and I don't normally like refer to selling out as a bad thing. It just comes so out of nowhere that I can't help but like look at it in the same way as like the Tetris video game.
Wait, are you saying Myst isn't relevant Tetris movie today?
No, I'm saying Myst is more relevant now than ever.
I feel like in some way it isn't relevant, and that's kind of what makes it weird. Not in terms of it being bad.
I was being sarcastic.
Yep.
Well, I mean more in terms of like that. Yeah. I have a hard I can imagine like a studio full of executives and them being like, you know, it's big now. Halo, let's make a Halo TV show or something like that. I can't see like how did Myst kind of get on the radar in such a non-sequitur way.
Yeah.
Yeah, you kind of what I mean?
Yeah, I think I'm picking up what you're putting down. Like it's been 9 years since since the last mainline Myst game, right?
Right.
And Myst Online, like Uru, has been, running. It ran for, like, until shockingly recently, until it went defunct. But yeah. I mean, so for a long time, Myst was the best-selling video game of all time, or the best-selling PC game of all time, right? Because most people saw it as, like, a way to show off, like, hey, this is my computer. And a lot of people bought it because, hey, it's a CD game. I have a CD drive now. Like until The Sims came out, like it had an 8-year run as the highest selling PC game. So like there is some cachet, and like I would imagine there is a non-trivial number or percentage of people of a certain age, like our age and older probably, who if you said, hey, Myst, did you play that? They would probably say, oh yeah, in the library, in the children's section on the Max, right?
Sure.
Yeah, maybe they didn't get off the main island, but they probably say, oh yeah, that's a thing. That is the only reason I can see it, coming out. Not so much now, but ever. And what's really crazy about it is that like the main guys are behind it. This is something I could see being more likely to happen if the license was gutted, essentially, and like if Ubisoft was still handling it. But no, Ubisoft doesn't have the rights to Myst anymore.
Who's making it? Is there like a specific network or anything like that?
There's nothing about distribution. It's being produced by Legend, which is a big television production company that has done some things. Yeah. What I will say though is that Cyan's new game, Abduction, looks fantastic.
All right.
Yeah.
That sounds cool.
It's similar to Myst in that it is a first person puzzle based
wonder.
Yeah, yeah. A spiritual successor to Myst and Riven. So they just put out like a bunch of preview build stuff. And it looks great.
I think for me the biggest issue with the concept of just Myst as a TV show is just kind of what Ben was saying, where he was mentioning how are they going to get the feeling of isolation? Like, how are you going to generate something that even has any really remote sense of the game as it was in its original form? Like, even if you try to abstract out and try to bring the spirit into a TV show, I just don't know how they would do with that.
Yeah.
It seems like that would be kind of more challenging than it's worth to try to jack with that. Why don't you just make something that lends itself to the medium more? But
yeah, absolutely. Like, another thing that kind of makes me angry about this isn't the kind of storytelling that Myst does well. Myst's storytelling is almost always, environmental. It is inductive storytelling rather than, wait, am I saying that right? Yeah, it's inductive rather than deductive. You're looking at the smaller part and abstracting out to the whole, or, you know, kind of like building that out, as opposed to, you know, looking at the bigger picture and then going into a detail, like put more succinctly outside of the journals. Really, everything is delivered to you indirectly. Whereas in a television show, everything has to be done either through dialogue or, exposition, or actually showing you things that happen. Whereas in the games, you're pretty much always seeing an aftermath, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's just, it is a different kind of storytelling, like, and it's moving away from a kind of storytelling that games do really, really well into something that I don't know if it can stand up to, you know, a linear kind of, you know, discovery. Like, I can't imagine doing anything related to Myst without a notebook in my lap, you know?
Yeah.
Is there enough backstory in the game that they could just say, you know, our point is not to recreate the experience, we just want to tell stories in this world?
Yeah, I think there is. And, you know, the books did that pretty well. Yeah. Blah.
Is there going to be a gun in the foreground of Abduction?
I don't believe so.
Not interested.
Not a real game. Yeah. Jala, how about you?
Okay, there's mine. It's pretty short. Researchers have developed artificial intelligence software that is significantly better at predicting what a player is trying to achieve in a video game. And it was originally developed for educational games, but it obviously has a lot more application for all player adaptive games in general. The current state of the art AI program for goal recognition has an accuracy of 48.4%. But the accuracy for this new program is 62.3%. So that's a pretty big jump. And the paper that this came out of was just presented at the 10th Annual Conference on Artificial Intelligence and Interactive Digital Entertainment. That sounds riveting. On October 5th through 7th. So, yeah. That is a new thing. And that is interesting to me because that's something that I think could really, like, if that particular type of AI were to improve that much and then, again, make another leap after that, then the type of games that could be churned out using that kind of you know, programming would be pretty interesting. I think that opens up a lot of new doors, I think.
So are you putting forward the possibility of procedurally generated games that are making content for you based on what it thinks you're trying to do?
It could be, or any number of other things. I mean, there's plenty of people out there to take it and run with it, if you will. Yeah. So I'm kind of interested to see what happens with that.
Yeah.
So
You could even use it to implement like help text, whether they pop up, you know.
Okay, guys.
Yeah.
Hear me out. Okay, it's like Clippy from Microsoft Word. Okay, except instead of being a paper clip, it is a handgun magazine. You know, like for holding the bullets, and it offers you on the fly tutorials. And his name is get this, Clippy.
Yeah, but then we'd be obligated to point out that that's a magazine, not a clip.
Oh, nobody knows the difference.
I know the difference.
I know.
Don't make me kill again. Says Clippy.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Clippy. All I can see is, oh, God, oh, God, oh, God, oh, God, oh, God.
So do they talk at all about, like, what's more specific on what it's what it's trying to predict? Because I feel like usually what I'm trying to do in a game is like pretty simple. It's like see guy, make guy be dead. Like I feel like
since they're originally doing it for educational purposes, it might have been more like puzzle type games, maybe. But
But if it can recognize what your goals are, it could throw more stuff in your path to make it more challenging.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I guess I'm more trying to just wrap my head around like exactly like is this like an artificial intelligence type thing or is this like some sort of like I don't know, I guess
Can I use it for a dissertation or not?
Well, yes, that is relevant.
Look into it, David. Report back.
Yeah.
I already tried to look up the impact factor of the conference, but I didn't find anything.
Yeah. So, there are some games that do this, right? Like, to a very, you know, lesser degree, mm-hmm. but like, Silent Hill Shattered Memories?
The way that the monsters are?
Yeah. But I guess that's not predictive, is it? Because it's responding and putting new stuff in front of you based on your past behaviors. Yeah. It's not actually
predictive.
Well, it's not supposing what your next action is going to be. It is altering the legs of the journey that you can go on depending on the action that you've taken and kind of customizing the way the enemies look.
What I'm kind of interested in is whether or not they're going to use that in something like fighting games, for example, to try to tie in VRGE. So
I'm pretty sure I've seen like several 80s movies with that plot.
You mean like Lawnmower Man?
Yeah.
I don't know. Just where like, you know, the robot downloads a fighting game that can learn and then starts like,
thermonuclear Clippy. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like one area I would like to see this applied is the situation where like you select a topic or a response in like Mass Effect, or you know, you get to like your ending in you know, some multiple ending game. It's like, that's totally not what I meant to do or would have done.
Well, I suppose we'll see.
Yeah. Neat. And Ben, how about you?
Yeah, mine seems way less cool in comparison to that. That seems like a very interesting story. Mine is just about how the next modern or advanced warfare game by Call of Duty is going to be cross-platform for both PS3 and PS4.
Oh, yeah.
So I just kind of wanted to bring up the point that it seems like this year has been the year of cross-platform. Like, I have had no incentive to upgrade my console, it seems, unless I want, you know, better polygons or more polygons.
This polygon only has two sides. What gives?
Polygon classism, yeah.
Hyper polygon.
Well, what's funny is that works both ways, right? Like, games that are coming out for the newer systems oftentimes right now have ports that are available for a system that you own. And a lot, like, it seems like every day I'm seeing a news story about, hey, this game that you can totally play right now is being upscaled for the new system as we scramble to get anything on it, like anything new on it, right?
This seems like a much bigger lag, though, than previous console transitions, you know? Like, I don't remember them doing this as much between the PS2 and PS3, you know? Like, it seemed there was a defined point, and it's like, all right, everything's on PS3 now, you know?
It was also, it seemed like the stuff that hung around tended to be a little bit more B-grade. Whereas this is like the big blockbuster games that normally would be, here's why you should buy a new system, are the ones that are on both.
Yeah.
And then the other thing on top of this is that a lot of these games are multiplayer. And so if it's between a PS3 and PS4, you're looking at free online service versus pay a yearly fee for online service. So that makes it even harder to justify the purchase of the PS4.
So will you stop saying that we need, like, that we will no longer be a modern game podcast now?
One day we will catch up.
Okay.
But this thing is, we're still playing the modern games. It's just on not modern consoles.
Okay, cool.
There actually is now one game that I really want to play on a modern system, and that's, was it Shadow of Mordor or whatever?
God damn, I was just about to say
really,
that
really
thing.
Good.
I think, like, based on what I've seen of it, Ben, you would love it. It is it is a Batman game, except it takes place in Lord of the Rings.
Batman crossed with GTA, from what I've seen.
Yeah.
This My mind cannot render those two. Okay. I've seen a video on this. I had not heard about it before this last week. Mm-hmm. It looks pretty cool. Where like enemies will advance with you and remember battles that you fought in. Isn't that the selling point of the game, right?
Yes, except that system is not present on last gen consoles. It's only that is the coolest thing that kind of gives rise to the most interesting stories I've heard, and like I was going to raise that as the exception.
Well, I can tell you that one of the listeners who has become a new gamer buddy, Tanner. Hi, Tanner. Uh-huh. He has been playing Shadow of Mordor lately, and he rather enjoys it. He's liking that quite a bit. He was not nearly as impressed with Alien Isolation, though. Yeah. So.
I have very mixed feelings about it. Like, I'm excited about it. I really want to play it. Some of the things with the kind of Lord of the Rings, Middle-earth lore, I kind of have mixed feelings about.
Yeah. I can turn that off and have fun.
Yeah, yeah. I know. I don't mind. I think I've had this conversation with someone. I don't mind adaptations. Like, I've never understood the whole, like, oh, this movie isn't exactly the same as the comic book. But I don't like when they dumb it down to do the adaptation. And
that's funny, because, like, of all the people on the show, I think that you're the most outspoken for, like, I just want to do some cool shit, and I don't care about, like, kind of, like, the implications of what's happening behind it.
Not to present a
cartoon version of your opinions, but that actually surprises me that you're hung up on it.
Yeah, I think that's fairly accurate. I mean, part of it is probably that just this is like a mythos or whatever that I care about. Part of it is, I would say, it's not so much that I don't want it to be an action game, so much as I feel like it doesn't need to be. The biggest issue I have is just the Lord of the Rings is basically a very low magic fantasy setting. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I don't quite like the idea that in order to be a fantasy setting, you must have magic.
But. Is there, I mean, just I haven't seen any evidence for there being like straight up magic in this game, though.
Yeah, you can, for example, teleport. It's basically, it looks to me like it drew a lot of inspiration from Dishonored.
Yeah. All the more reason to love it.
Right. No, you're pseudo possessed by something that is very overtly inspired by Ringwraith.
Yeah.
And so that they have like their version of like Eagle Vision from Assassin's Creed that's like makes everything look like in the Lord of the Ring movies when they put the ring on, stuff like that. It's not horrible, and actually a lot of the reviews I've read said although they do that, they actually do take the time to like pull in particularly some of the like old age pre Lord of the Rings lore in order to like back stuff up. So it does sound like they at least tried to make it work. So I can respect that.
I would rather them do that than strictly adhere to the lore and release a game that wasn't fun.
Definitely. It's definitely a balancing act.
Yeah, I can understand that argument, though, because I remember the first time I played Knights of the Old Republic, like, thinking, like, you can't have a purple and yellow lightsaber and be using two of them at once. You know, like, I had similar trepidations about that game, but I think all the reasons that they were using for doing it was just to make it more fun. So
yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, man, I need to be careful in the way that I say this, because it could be like a monkey's paw kind of thing. Like, this has been such a good year for games, and I have not had a chance to play hardly any of them. Like that, like that. That's really I don't know. Time keeps on slipping.
Well, recently I've played so many different games, as you'll find out in the grind, and I want to play Shadow of Mordor. I have no idea when I'm going to play.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like,
so
I have a quick follow-up on a story we dwelt on a lot last week before we move on to multiplayer. Okay. Pretty much the day that we released the episode, making us sound like jackasses, as sometimes happens due to the... apparently 3 days is too much of a lag between when we record something and when we put it out. But Steam came out and said, hey, yeah, if you are being paid to curate something, that is going to be marked. Mm-hmm. And I think right now it's just honor system, but the fact that there is at least a nominal, effort to address that is a good thing. So,
yeah, and I feel like it's recommending that my curator be quote PC is the master race. So I feel like at least their data mining algorithms seem to be working.
I guess. Yeah. I think that we are going to be very... I already think that PC Gamer Master Race is an embarrassing thing, but like eventually when like it'll be like the 100th monkey kind of thing. One person is going to realize, huh, we're making a reference to the Holocaust, right? And then just all of a sudden everybody is going to like just pull off the road in shame and just say, why? So
indifference.
Yeah. Also, Twitch is marking sponsored content, which is pretty cool. So,
Very cool. Disclosure,
guys.
Multiplayer.
It is time for multiplayer, where we ask you some questions and you answer, and then sometimes we answer too. Dennis put this question out a little bit earlier today. These questions usually go up on our Facebook page, facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. He asks, have you ever played in a guild or a clan for an online game? If so, how did you find them, and what was your experience like?
I like Christopher Schlee's answer. I'm just going to say that at the end.
I did as well.
Just go ahead. Say it.
Nope.
Yep, there you have it. Christopher Schlee caps everything off by saying, nope. Yeah.
Drop the mic.
Well, Jala, do you also want to say what David Petroko says?
Sure. David says, yes. I was in a raiding guild in WoW for 2-ish years. Time went by and real life kept us from raiding anymore, but when you spend 10-plus hours a week talking to people, you make some real friends. There are still 5 of us that keep in close contact and play various other games together. None of us live in the same state, save 2 brothers, so it's all online.
Yeah. A lot of WoW. A lot of WoW there is.
The WoW factor.
Yeah. WoW. Ben, what's Sean say?
Sean says, I was in a WoW guild for 8-plus years. We had a great time and would often talk outside of raids, keeping me up well past sanity. I even managed to meet 2 of them when I traveled for work to Utah a couple years ago. We still keep in touch on and off. Off and on.
Yeah. I'm curious about that. So, like, just the idea of keeping in touch with people that you played games with after you, you know, end your time
Stop
with the
games.
Game. Yeah.
Well, I've got a story for you when I answer the question.
Yeah. Well, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. Well, first off, yes, I have, but also it's kind of a larger thing. I've played on games online of various sorts for years, including just role-playing games, just typing out stories together with people, and also playing video games and things like that. That's actually how I met Slade, my fiance. And actually, my best friend Nolan was in the Guild Wars 2 gaming guild that I was in. I was actually, for a time, the forum moderator for Guild Wars Insider, which was a news site, and I ended up forming a guild with some of the people from that site. Some of my friends that I still hang out with, even now, like my friend Conrad and, again, my best friend Nolan, I met them via playing Guild Wars 2. And my sister is married to her best friend, who she met on EverQuest long, long ago. So lots of that in my family, apparently.
Yeah.
See, I feel like online dating is so much more relevant when it involves slaying dragons.
Well, you have common interests automatically, and especially when you get to talking to this person, because, you know, there's lag time in games where you're just kind of sitting around going, I don't know what I want to do. Like, you get into the habit of playing with them, even though you don't necessarily know what you want to do in the game. And so you start talking about real life and blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, you end up forming closer bonds because you don't have the kind of distractions that you do face to face where, you know, something interrupts or somebody, you know, you're watching their body language or whatever. And it's harder to physically get in contact with each other. Whereas online, you can just jump on anytime and everybody's got a computer or a phone or something they can pop on and say hi, you know. So
my question for you is somebody who's done this a lot, you know, did you find that eventually kind of the social aspect, you know, outweighed the actual game itself in terms of like what motivated you to sit down and open that program?
Oh, yeah. Especially in the case of, you know, all the people that I met that got to be really good friends of mine, we play other games like the guild eventually disbanded, but we still, a lot of us still hang out, still talk, and, you know, we talk more on a friend level than anything, and more than just like, hey, I'm a gaming buddy and all I talk to you about is games. It's a lot more than that. So. Mm-hmm. And hey, that's how I met all of you people. Yes, in your guild online.
Is this a guild?
Is this a podcasting guild? You have the group on Steam.
I suppose
we
do.
And I started playing games with Dennis and David that way.
I forget not everybody's like a loner curmudgeon like me.
I would totally play games with you, but you're never like you need to be propped up a lot of times.
Yeah. Man, let's see here. David, what's Tim say?
Tim said, I have a similar story to those above. Raided in WoW for a couple years and had many of my favorite gaming memories while doing so. Every once in a while, I think about getting back into WoW, but I know I'll never recapture that magic.
That's actually
a little bit, in some ways, my experience in terms of, you know, trying to get... Actually, this will be my... some of my grind, but I've been trying to get back into WoW, but you know, pretty much everyone I know that's played no longer plays, so it's really hard you know, trying to get into it without a guild, because I mean, so much of the experience you know, just kind of trades on that. I know. You know, the main guild I was in for a while and was in EverQuest, that, you know, you introduced me to. I'm sure you'll cover that, but yeah, that was kind of the main group I've been in, and I feel like that was a interesting game for being in a guild, just because there were so few rules. So, you know, a raid could just be like everyone in the guild that wants to come. So, like, you know, you're level 2 and you want to raid this dungeon, sure, go for it.
Yep. That's pretty funny. Yeah, I don't know. That is a little heartbreaking, because like, how often does that happen? Like, oh, Jim lost interest in golf, or Gladys doesn't want to play bridge anymore. Right? Like,
true.
But you know, like for basically everybody that came before us, these were lifelong pursuits.
Right.
I'm just thinking of the scene of Brooks in Shawshank Redemption where he tries to assimilate back in the world. Everybody's gone now.
He still has to.
Wow, that's incredibly depressing.
They're driving around on these fast mounts now. I don't understand it.
Well, honestly, it's kind of like that with Guild Wars 2 for me. I mean, once my guild stopped playing, I even though I still know some of the people, we don't ever play that game. We chit-chat, we do other stuff, but we don't go back to that game. And, you know, there was a time and a place for it, but that time has passed. So unless there's just a bunch of Guild Wars 2 players out there that drag me back into it magically, I'm probably not going to get back in. So.
We did for a while mooch off of Conrad's guild.
Oh, totally. That's because, you know, he was still playing at the time.
Yeah, so one of our friends was a member of like one of the serious like top tier you know, PvP and raiding guilds. So it was basically when we casuals weren't good enough or smart enough to figure something out, we would just call on his help.
Yep. he was kind of like a summons. Yes.
Dad. Yeah. Ben, I realized we hit you and then moved on. Do you have any experience with this kind of thing?
I do. My junior year of high school, I was in a guild for Medal of Honor Allied Assault. And so, yeah, for some reason, that was a game I picked up and spent a lot of time playing the multiplayer on that and got pretty good. So, yeah, I don't know. That's a thing. I was really good at shooting people on a computer game, I guess. So.
How did you find them?
I would just play on random servers and... I don't know, like, if you were good enough and played with people long enough, eventually they'd ask you if you wanted to be in the guild. So, yeah.
Huh.
But that one, you know, like, the guild had ranks or whatever in that game, since, you know, it's a war setting, so it was kind of fun.
Yeah. So did you organize, like, off-site? Because that, you know, a game that early, that totally didn't have any kind of organizational structure behind it.
Yeah, like, I mean, you basically get on. It was not for a long time that I was in the guild. I was, you know, like, I only did it for a little bit. But I mean, I think there was like weekly like meetings or whatever where you'd meet like on Sunday and you'd play a few games together and stuff. But
yeah,
I don't know how that was organized or whatever. I didn't really go that deep into it. But
yeah, you just kind of showed up and shot stuff.
Yep, pretty much. Gun in the foreground.
Gun in the foreground. Is that your new like slogan? Like, is that your mantra? Gun in the foreground.
No.
So it's no longer a first person shooter. It's now a foreground shooter.
I still say that Thermonuclear Clippy is a better title. That's my title, Martin.
Oh man. Let's see here. So Geolot. Jeffrey Lawton, super fan, writes
Honey Badger.
In. There we go. He writes in saying, "For a while, I was part of an active Tribes Ascend pickup game community. More or less, any night there were enough people to play a few games. It was a great way to get into a more structured version of the game without committing to a serious competitive team. Pickups were much more strategy focused compared to the free for all of public servers. It was a good mix of experienced and new players, and people were generally open to helping new people improve and weren't usually jerks about anybody making mistakes. I look back fondly on those nights and I'd stay up until four playing as an offensive support, raining down artillery fire to clear the stand as the nimble capper made his approach. Unfortunately, the community slowly died out as the developer pulled support from Tribes when their MOBA started taking off. It was a lot of fun while it lasted, though."
Yeah. I feel like for a moment there, like, it you know, got into, like, a Nature Channel documentary. Like,
I was going to say something about
the
that.
Like, offensive support attempts to distract the targets while the capper nimbly...
Yes.
A wild capper.
Yes. Notice the plumage on his disc fuser. Whatever it was, the spin disc, spin doctors. Yeah.
Spin doctors.
Yeah. But bunny hopping with the spin
most
doctors.
Most destructive tool.
Yeah. I wish I could name a single spin doctor song. Two Princes, was that them? I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. Yeah, that kind of, so Tribes was interesting. That's a game that I kind of, yep, Two Princes with Spin Doctors. That's a game that I always wanted to get into because I loved the kind of the scale of it. So it's like Tribes 2 was one that I played like in public servers or whatever, but just the idea that you could be a guy who just camped out running from radio tower to radio tower and that would help out your team. In a way that, like, oh, I can't shoot for shit, so, like, going in and assaulting a base wouldn't be good, but I can be the guy who makes sure that we have radar coverage, right?
Yeah.
Like, that really lends itself to organized play in a way that, like, spoke to me well after there was any kind of community for Tribes 2.
Yeah. That sounds... I haven't played this game or heard of it before, so... But that sounds like a cool concept.
Yeah. Really... really well remembered and really, really influential. I mean, there's just tons of games that are, you know, inspired by Tribes or take elements from it. Pretty much anything with a rocket pack.
Yeah. It's also one of the first multiplayer shooters that I've seen that has like a designated commander role, which is, you know, a thing that was carried forward like in Battlefield, right? Like there is somebody who has the authority to call the shots and drop waypoints and stuff. Yeah. Yeah, so I'll go ahead with mine. As David alluded to, I spent a lot of time in an EverQuest guild. And that was kind of less about playing the game. Like it was, you know, it was neat, but it was more about having a chat room with a bunch of like really diverse people. I think that was the biggest benefit that I got out of it. And so like even, you know, they tolerated that I was really young. Like this was concurrent with the time when I would just spend a lot of time on AOL Instant Messenger, you know, chatting with people. So I was like 14 when I started playing it, and they kind of welcomed me and tolerated that. And they tolerated that I didn't play very often and that I never really got to the high end. But like if somebody was bringing an alt up, I would, you know, go roll with them on their alt and like play shittily. But like they were very nice people. And I think that the thing that kind of like maybe broke the game a little bit for me was like, you know, people leave guilds and there were power struggles or whatever. Like as ridiculous as that sounds, it's like, oh, my buddy doesn't want to stick around because they disagree with somebody else. So they're gone. Well, shit. Right. It was almost like a weird microcosm of a professional environment before any kind of professional, before I ever had any experience with a professional environment. But yeah, they were like they were called the League of Honor. I found them because they were just, there was somebody running around with their guild tag in like Eastern Freeport or whatever. I was like, oh, that seems pretty cool. I'll ask if I can join. And they made an exception to let me join and I joined. And I think my character is still a member of that guild. I popped in a little while ago and like nobody was online. It was like, okay, yeah, it's well and truly dead.
Yeah, that was, that kind of dying to, I don't know, it was weird. Like, it was really depressing to me, even though, like, I was never, like, nearly as involved with as you were. Partially because, like, it held on for a long time.
It did.
I mean, like, I'm, you know, EverQuest 1 was pretty old and pretty niche when World of Warcraft came out. Mm-hmm. And it was going fairly strong at least a couple years into World of Warcraft.
Yeah. Like, I followed a bunch of the people over to WoW, and then they're I'm going to go back. Yeah. Like, any of the offshoot guilds didn't last as long as the main one, you know? And, like, there are some of them, you know, like, at the very least one of them, the guild leader lady, I still, like, message her from time to time, you know?
Sure.
Crazy. The other experience that I had, and I'm going to run through this real quick, it was actually really similar to yours, Ben. It was for Team Fortress Classic.
Okay.
I joined the Birds of Prey.
I remember that name, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They were great dudes. Like, all of them were just
P-R-A-Y?
Like...
P-R-A-Y?
No, P-R-E-Y. They were not religious. Oh. I think one of the guys was pretty religious. But they're all like a bunch of college dudes, and I was playing Team Fortress. This is like at exactly the same time I was in my EverQuest guild, too. So like I just saw them on a server and they were like really cool. It was like, yeah, you find a server, they just, oh, I like these guys. This seems to attract a good crowd. I'll stick around. Until finally I was like, yeah, can I join your thing? Yeah, sure. We'll put you in there. And it was a very similar situation. I mostly just hung around in IRC because I was looking for people to chat with, but I played competitively for a little bit. Mm-hmm. As like an engineer or as a soldier or something like that, something real low maintenance, like, hey, let's get him over here so he can, you know, just kind of guard the base or whatever. But like it was pretty neat. And that too lasted for like 3 years of like practice on Wednesday night and play on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So does our Halo group count as a guild?
I don't know. Maybe. I would say it's like a hallmark of a clan or a guild is that it has to happen entirely online. Like a group of people, okay. Like would you call it like a, is there a poker guild?
Yeah.
The Chipsmiths. The Chipsmiths of Richland County. Yeah. Oh man. Let's see. I've gone Jala. What does Gustavo say?
He says, I play Final Fantasy XIV with something awful goons, despite goons' reputation in other MMOs like in EVE Online. I had a good experience so far and would have met a few of them in the upcoming Fan Fest in Vegas, but I got orders to go to school. The more interesting thing is that the goons are divided into two. The first one was supposed to be the main one, and it's more serious about endgame stuff. The second one was supposed to be a spillover guild due to the limitations on the amount of people there can be in a guild. In the end, the spillover guild became its own thing, and it's more chill and about helping newbies in the game. For example, I love to craft high-quality lobby armors, accessories, and weapons for free as long as they don't mind wearing pink armor or other extravagant colors. I'm all about the pink. There you go.
Yeah. The goons do have... the Something Awful forum members do have a reputation in other MMOs, but...
Yeah, what's their reputation? Kind of a weird one, though, because, I mean, it's not exactly positive, but also not exactly negative, either.
Yeah, like... People may not like them, but goddamn it, they respect them. But they wreck shit in Eve. And what's funny is, like, you don't have to be a Something Awful goon to be in one of those things. Like, they don't check your registry. There was a guy who came into the GameStop that I worked in down here who always wore a shirt with a B on it, and I recognized that as like a piece of Something Awful affiliated, clothing, right? It's kind of like, oh, are you on SA? Because I'm totally on SA. And he's like, no, I'm in the Goon Fleet or whatever. And it's like, oh, so I have literally nothing to talk with you about. Cool. Yeah. Huh. Let's see. Ben, what does Phil Holmes say?
Phil says, I did some endgame raiding with a guild back in Vanilla WoW. I remember it had its ups and downs. If you're in a group of friends who get along great, it works really well. But many times raiding becomes a time commitment that adult life does not allow. Still, it's a good feeling when you take out a boss for the first time as a team. Yeah.
I think he alludes to it. Like the primary issue is the time commitment. Like making an appointment to be in a place with a bunch of other people.
Mm-hmm.
I always got frustrated with how long it took to even get started with anything, actually. Like,
yeah,
you know, something I can't stand in real life is when I go to a meeting or when I am hopping on the phone with a client, right? And it's like, okay, this thing starts at 10:30 and waiting until like 10:42 for everybody to get on the phone and like get their shit together to actually talk about what we're going to talk about. That doesn't count so much for this because I'm talking with friends, but like, God damn it.
Well, you know what happens to me is that I have Jala Wanderers Around syndrome. So for me, it's absolutely fine because if I'm waiting for something, I'll just go off and do something else. And I'm perfectly fine going, hey, what's that thing over there? Oh God. Hey guys. You know, whatever.
Yeah. That train to zone. Yeah.
I know, actually that's something that Wildstar is sort of self-destructing from the inside on that because the people who developed it were really, really hardcore into like we want to cater this to hardcore gamers and raiders and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of coming out where it's like, hey, like, there's a lot of people. We don't want you to dumb it down to us. Like, we don't want it to be, like, casual or whatever. But at the same time, we don't have, like, 2 or 3 hours to do a raid. You know, like, we have lives. We have kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, I don't know if that's maybe... I think kind of just an age thing. I mean, think about it. World of Warcraft's 10 years old. You could easily... have been at a point where when you were raiding, you were in high school, and now you have kids.
That was multiplayer section. Thank you so much, everybody, for submitting your responses to our question. Check back on our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/thelevelpodcast next Tuesday, probably sometime in the afternoon, to see what's happening next. But we really appreciate everybody writing in.
The grind.
It is now time for The Grind, where we talk about the games we've been playing over the past week or so. I'm going to get mine out of the way. Have not played anything.
Okay.
All right.
Yep. Because of Portland Retro Games Expo, I have been trying to get as far ahead on assignment play as possible. And that means I have been playing a whole shitload of Resident Evil and I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream. But I am officially like a month ahead on those things. Also because we are doing an especially time intensive game for the episodes that come after that. And so I don't want to be caught in the lurch.
Sounds good.
Can I ask what is that game?
Well, I teased it, so I'm going to have to say it, but I'm going to edit it out just in case plans change. We're doing.
Oh, okay.
Ooh, snap.
You made me happy.
Yeah. I feel like that's innately a game about.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to find a way. Life finds a way. That may or may not be a hint about what we're playing. Oh, man. I love teasing people. Yeah, so let's pass that off. I played The Path because I wanted something to talk about. The plan. There we go, The Plan.
Ah, the little itty-bitty five-minute game.
Yeah. And really, nothing has made me feel more like one of those Gamergate goobs than playing that game. Actually, not in the hating women sense, but in the not a real game lol kind of thing. Just because I got to the end of it and I was irrationally angry because I could tell this is trying to I can tell this might be trying to mean something, but
yep,
yeah. So
it's one of those, but it's real short.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't cost me any money, so I can't be like, give me money. This is an insult to games. I can't be like that.
When I first mentioned it to you guys, it was mostly just because, hey, guess what? This is by the same people who did this other game.
Oh,
so.
Yeah. Krillbyte, the guys who did Among the Sleep, which is an immensely more powerful work.
I know. It's kind of baffling that they did The Plan, but whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, so that is mine. I can't say don't play it, but I can say what the fuck.
It's not exactly a time investment or anything. It's five minutes.
Yeah. So maybe do play it and then get on the comments and tell me how fucking dense I am. Yeah. So who wants to volunteer something that they've actually played?
I can go.
Okay.
But I do like that you haven't been playing any games because you've been playing too many games.
Yep. Well, let me say this. Resident Evil for the GameCube is one of the best games I've ever played. It is still really good. It is the most hostile world I think I've seen in a video game, and is still one of the scariest. So go play that. Also, I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream is deeply flawed, but is still like laudable for its storytelling. And I think that it is kind of like a foundational work in both horror and in adventure games. There you go.
All right.
Yeah. Go ahead, Ben.
So I mentioned this last week, but I picked up Destiny. And so I've been playing that for the last week. And I'm at about a level 13 or 14 right now. Yeah. So I'd say I'm probably about halfway through the game, probably. Yeah, it's not bad. I don't think it'll be like a never forget type of game, but it's basically Halo compartmentalized missions on planets of the solar system with like a kind of thin MMO experience on top of that. So like they have it, you know, it has a feeling of an MMO because there's different maps where you kind of meet to like upgrade your items, to get new items, to get missions and stuff that everybody is a part of. So it's kind of like an open world. So you see other people online in the same map, and then it kind of seamlessly blends into multiplayer. Where you just kind of go on these missions and do multiplayer, or you can go on to missions to planets and do the story, but it's all kind of one interface. Mm-hmm. So it's not bad. It's kind of fun, but it's, you know, already it's, I can kind of get it, I guess. And I don't know if it'll keep evolving enough to make it interesting. So we'll see. I'll probably finish it out in a week or two, but yeah.
Yeah.
Would you say, do you think, you know, they definitely pitch this as wanting to be like a new franchise. They've said what they've said, it's going to be like a 10-year franchise or something. Do you think they succeeded in kind of kicking things off?
I mean, the story isn't bad. The only knock I have against it is it seems very similar to Halo, where like the characters are kind of tone deaf. They have like your main character, even though he's not like a Master Chief character, has the same sort of stoicism, and you have like a robot sidekick essentially that is like Guilty Spark but not quite evil. But so I don't know. The characters are pretty flat, so I don't know how much room they have to evolve within that. However, like the world and like the mythos of that is probably more interesting. As far as kind of like what's going on and the driving force of what you're doing. But again, with the gameplay, it still has the same pitfalls of Halo, where you're doing kind of not exactly a substanceless mission, but it's like you need to get this object from this place. You're going to go to this exotic location, fight through waves of enemies, and then at the end you get that thing. And now you're going to go to a new map, and you need to get this thing, and you're going to fight through waves of enemies to get that. So nice. It's like you're just doing a lot of shooting and killing on the way to get to a plot-moving device, you know? So
something that I haven't been able to discern from gameplay videos that I've watched, because trying to watch this game being played by somebody else is just a baffling task, I think.
Mm-hmm.
How does it feel, right? Because Halo differentiates itself by having a very kind of like plotting pace relative to other shooters, generally feeling just a little bit more floaty insofar as everything is a little bit less touched by gravity, and the projectiles, at least on non-hitscan weapons, you know, move pretty slow. Does this have kind of that same insubstantial feel as other Halo games, or are they trying to make it, you know, snappier to appeal to, you know, the Call of Duty. Yeah.
So some of the controls are tightened up. They, instead of having they still have a somewhat floaty jump, similar to Halo, but on top of that, the way they do a double jump is you have like a jetpack where it kind of wherever. It's like a double jump. So when you press the second jump, you continue with whatever trajectory you had. So they call it a glide, I think. So if you just jump straight up and double jump, it'll send you straight up and then straight back down. If you're kind of falling down and you press the double jump, you glide downward slowly. So that's kind of an interesting mechanic I haven't seen before. So the jumping is fun. Shooting is pretty similar to Halo. I think the rockets are a little bit faster, but some of them can be slower. But the shooting's pretty on par with the previous Halo games. Where, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is it still as melee-centric?
It's even like more so melee-centric. Where, so you're no matter what class you pick, there are like three powers that you have at all times. One of them is just like your grenade, and you can kind of switch out what grenade you use, and they have different functions to them. One of them, it's like called a overload or something like that, where it's a meter that slowly fills over time, but it fills more if you melee people and like steal their energy, quote unquote. But it's just kind of like a supercharge move where you throw out like a giant ball of energy, and it one hit kills a lot of people, or at least like greatly damages bosses. And then the third thing is the draining energy mechanic, where if you melee somebody, it builds up your meter for the second thing. But meleeing is like super powerful in comparison to shooting. So often it's a lot easier if like three or four guys rush you. It's easier to just melee them all one at a time than trying to shoot them. So yeah, that is, yeah, it's super overpowered, but for better or for worse. But yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Have you spent any time really in the Crucible?
Yeah, I've spent a little bit of time. The thing that I noticed is I don't know. So, like, it seems like people who are at higher levels have a much bigger advantage. I don't know how they, quote-unquote, level the playing field. You know, like, when it's, like, I'm, like, a level 10 and there's a level 25 playing or whatever. I don't know how they because it feels like that they can just kill you instantly. And so like a lot of the games I've been playing are like are area control missions where you have to control points. So a lot of what I've been trying to do is just help out with that instead of trying to directly attack people and kill them. But yet it feels like the leveling system isn't that great as far as them not matching you with like level players. Yeah. But I actually recently read that they were supposed to release a patch to address that. So that might be something that's fixed soon.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. Like from what I understand, there's actually no matchmaking happening.
Oh, what do you mean?
Yeah, that's my understanding is like it's not actually looking at what levels people are.
Oh, it's just like randomly assigning them.
Yeah, like if you are, are you player? Yes, then cool, then
good to go.
Match with other player. Good. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh well, yeah. They should probably fix that then.
Yeah.
All levels are beautiful.
Yeah. Well, which is funny because, it's funny because Bungie has been so good about that in the past. That's been something that's made their shit right. You know?
Yeah. With Halo games, yeah.
Yeah. Huh.
Yeah. So that's kind of weird. But again, I don't know. That's and I don't know if that's true or not. That's just the impression that I get so far is that you get hosed by people who are upper levels. And I don't know if it's an issue of like their stats are stronger or if they just have better guns or mm-hmm. I don't know how they rationalize the different levels, but yeah. It certainly feels that way. So
yep. I really like the kind of jumping back to a previous thing, the way they're doing the next gen, current gen thing, where it's basically like until January of next year, if you buy current gen, you also get it next gen if you buy the download version.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So have you felt limited by the fact that you're on PS3, Ben?
No. Not really. I mean, again, I don't have a basis of a comparison as far as I'm not sitting next to a PS4 version of it and being like, oh, but so it doesn't seem that bad. But I imagine if I were, then I would, prefer the PS4 version. But.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Anything else about Destiny?
No, that's about it. I'll report back on it.
Cool. So I'm going to throw off to you, Jala.
Okay, I'm just going to list off a bunch of different titles, and then I will actually selectively pick things to say about them.
Cool.
Here's the reason why. I oftentimes, when I am not stricken by a particular game that I'm just completely enchanted with, I will play a little bit of a lot of games trying to figure out what I want to play next. So that's what I've been doing lately. I continued playing the Dishonored DLC for Knife of Dunwall, and the main thing I want to say about that is I want to be able to free the whale and let it kill shit for me. I need this to happen. That would make me very happy. You can get on top of it. You need to be able to let it free and let it rampage. That would be great. That would make me very happy. But anyway, otherwise,
the
I just...
Far Cry approach.
Well, I'm playing the DLC in kind of high chaos mode where the main quest I played completely differently. And I don't know if that's just because in the DLC you're playing Dowd and you're an assassin guy, who is like, that's what you do. And I actually have a little less interest in playing like an actual established assassin person who has like a network of people working with him versus being just a loner doing my thing. I don't know if that's what it is or what, but I'm playing it differently. Anyway, played a little bit more of that. I played about an hour of Tomb Raider and Devil May Cry. I will talk about that in a bit. I finished off The Walking Dead Season 2, and I have some things that I can't say about that because, too new. But I know I've made some choices that are highly, highly unpopular, particularly one specific choice that I actually feel very strongly about, and I have a lot of reasons why I chose the way I did. So whenever you guys do a bonus level, I need to be on it. So
yeah. So I don't know that we can hit all of those.
Oh, no. Oh. No, I'm just listing titles about different stuff. I'm not even going to talk about them in any real degree.
Okay,
cool. I broke Sniper Elite V2 within like 5 minutes of gameplay. I was doing that whole Jolly likes to explore things, and I broke it, and I fell through the geometry. And I just did not go back to it after that because it saved right there. So I played some of Megabyte Punch, which I really like, and Pac-Man Championship Edition, and the Battle Cats, and the Yogg, and Unepic.
Holy shit.
Everything in the world for like an hour apiece, with a few exceptions. The ones that I'm most excited about are actually Megabyte Punch and Unepic. Those are probably my two favorites. They're both little indie games. So.
Yep. Okay. Yeah. So why don't you talk about those?
Okay, will do. Megabyte Punch is basically what Mega Man should have turned into instead of being the same stagnant thing over and over and over again. It kind of reminds me of, like, the level design, at least for the first level, reminds me somewhat of, like, a Sonic game. Like, just the way that the level is designed and what it looks like. But the gameplay is kind of like Mega Man, except you can switch out different parts, your different weapons and different parts of your armor, and adjust how you play the game depending upon what you pick up from the enemies that you kill and also what you buy in town. And then you also get power-ups from different bosses that you fight, but those boss fights are kind of like a Smash Brothers setup where, you know, it's very much like an old Smash Brothers little island that you can knock people way far up in the air and they can fall off of the battleground and just different stuff like that. It's kind of Smash Brothers-y. So it's a lot of fun and I've enjoyed it so far quite a bit. So that's one. And the other one is Unepic, which is a Castlevania-ish type of game / RPG kind of game made by one guy in Spain. And it's basically, the storyline is you are a dude who's playing D&D and you get up to go to the bathroom and then the lights turn out and then suddenly you're in a castle and you have no idea why. And so you think that your buddies gave you some kind of a drug or something. So you're like, oh, okay, I'm dreaming about this because we were playing D&D. And, you know, you haven't yet realized that, you know, this isn't actually a dream. This is real. And, you know, I have no idea what's going on right now because I've played just a couple of hours. I got possessed by some kind of a specter guy. This is right at the very beginning of the game. And it was kind of funny because he tries to take over your body and possess you and do his thing. And then he says, I can't possess this body because it has no faith. Impossible. And so he basically gets stuck inside of you and becomes your navvy or whatever, like telling you what's going on. And also you as a normal person who's entered a fantasy world, and you know, you've been completely inundated with media. There's references to Castlevania and to Forgotten Realms and to Star Wars and Lord of the Rings. You at one point say, I think that you're a Sith. And then another point you tell somebody that your name is Aragorn and you go on this whole thing, like just quoting little bits of different media because, you know, you think it's a dream and you're just being a jerk off. But the way it actually plays is pretty fun. I've been having a lot of fun with it so far and I'm definitely going to be continuing that and Megabyte Punch.
Okay. So the referential kind of stuff, Is that just window dressing, or does that actually like play into the things that it's asking you to do, or you know, confronting you with? Because if that's just the dialogue, that sounds kind of like the worst. But
there are some points where your character says, "Hey, this is kind of like that game." Kind of, I guess, trying to tip you off as to that's what you need to be thinking about. And you know, that particular part and how you play it. Mm-hmm. Other than that, no, it's just stuff. It's kind of like Saturday morning RPG in that way where it's just, you know, it references a thing and it's there just to, you know, be a surface thing for people who want that kind of a humor. The game itself, actually, just because of the way it plays, that's the thing that I like best about it. Not so much the dialogue or any of that nonsense, but the actual core mechanics and, you know, how it's been going so far is just kind of fun.
It looks incredibly complex.
It ramps up to it. It's not like it inundates you with too much stuff at once. So it actually has like a nice gentle curve to picking up how you need to do everything. But yeah, it looks like as I keep going, it's going to get more and more complex. There's definitely a lot of items. There's definitely a lot of abilities and different weapons, and you can upgrade, you know, any number of different things. So yeah, there is a lot to it. But I guess I've just been kind of looking for a game that plays like that. You know, I can only play Symphony of the Night so many times before I'm like, I want something else that I don't know by heart.
Yeah.
So.
And this was made by one person. Do you know how long it took for him to develop it?
I think it said 2 years or so. And, you know, he had some people who helped out with just, you know, certain little tidbits. But by and large, like all the main work was this one guy. And then, you know, like people basically as contractors coming in to just do, I don't know, like music or whatever. I don't know exactly which bits, but there were some people who contributed. But overall, it was just, you know, by and large, one guy's project for 2 years.
So that's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And it apparently has a kind of a cult following. So. But one thing I forgot to mention about Megabyte Punch, it also has a battle mode where you can fight other people and their little guys. So that's going to be neat when I get that far. I haven't gotten to the point where I have done the battle mode just yet. Slade bought the game, started playing it, loved it, and right when we were about to try the battle mode out, his computer died. So, whoops. So, I don't know when I'm going to be able to play that part, but yeah.
Huh. So, Megabyte Punch and Unepic.
Yes. Those are the main ones that are super exciting.
Yeah.
Because I cannot free Willy and let Willy kill everything in Dishonored. Oh,
yeah. it immediately disqualifies.
Yes.
That would have made the sequels to that movie so much better.
This is somewhat tangential, but have you guys heard or seen the movie Blackfish?
Yes. A lot of people were talking about that a while back. Is that the documentary about the horrible abuses that happened in SeaWorld?
Yeah. So I'll just say that you should check it out. It's worth watching. It's not how I imagined it. Yeah, I thought it was going to be like complete like whale abuse or whatever the entire time, but it's really like kind of poor decision making the entire time. But anyway, whatever.
Huh.
Good movie.
Cool. That's on Netflix, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah. David, round us out.
Sure. I've actually not been playing a great deal. I've kind of been in between games and also rather busy. Kind of as I alluded to, I've sort of been trying and failing to get back into World of Warcraft. I think I'm swearing off Borderlands 2. It's just, I think it's a good game, but at least playing solo, the fun to annoyance factor is just not where it needs to be. It's, you know, it's very easy to, you know, you can die very quickly in that game, and their checkpointing system is awful. Basically, checkpoints aren't saved when you exit the game. And, you know, the story missions can be like 2 hours plus long. So it's a thing where I just don't have time to like slog through killing all these enemies. And then, you know, if I can't finish a play session, have to do it all over again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
Is that just because other games have kind of trained you to, you know, trust that they will save what you've done, and this is kind of a more PC like experience? Or
I would actually say it's a less PC like experience because there's no ability to manually save, but it's more just basically it saves your actual physical progress in terms of, like, you know, if you have to capture, X number of whirligigs and you found five, you'll have found five when you come back. But the problem is it doesn't save your physical location. So, you know, if your ultimate objective is at the end of, you know, some facility, you basically have to fight through the same facility over again. It's also, I don't know, it seems like it's just, I think the balance is kind of tuned for having multiple people throwing around bullets. So it's just a lot of the enemies are very difficult to kill quickly.
As far as the first problem, is it possible to just pause the game and then come back to it later?
Yeah, I suppose that's possible, although my later would probably be like the next day, so I don't know. Yeah, I suppose that is possible.
That was one grievance I had with Destiny, is you cannot pause the game since you're like in an online world, so
that's true.
That's kind of a bummer, but yeah. Whatever.
Did you you beat this, right?
I have, yes.
Borderlands 2?
Yeah.
Did you feel like some of the enemies were not necessarily too hard, but just fighting them often took a little bit too long?
I just remember the one robot name, I forget if it was Saturn or Jupiter towards the end, but that one was pretty difficult if you were on your own.
I'm currently, when I finally gave up the last time, is there's a point where you're scripted to fight a super badass loader that can literally take me from full health to like 47 HP and on fire in like 2 to 3 seconds from long range.
Yeah, is this the map where there's all the like Jack help signs that are scattered about?
Oh no, this is the nature preserve.
Okay.
So that's actually one of the big thing, one of the best examples kind of what I'm talking about is, you know, all the most of the enemies in this area cloak, which is a cool mechanic, but it just means that fights take forever because you're trying to fight guys you can't see.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I don't think it's a bad game. It's just not a game that's worth my time right now.
Right.
So I figure since I on the plus side, though, this does finally give me the option time to play something I've kind of been playing off and on, but I've never gotten around to talk to, which is Sunless Sea.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know if you've seen this at all. It's basically the people that made Fallen London or Echo Bazaar, depending on which name you go by, have created another game in the same world that kind of continues the story or world or whatever. That's this one's sort of inspired by, I'd say, kind of a combination of FTL and sort of a I guess you'd say kind of a 4X game, although more focused on like the trade aspects of it. So kind of the plot line is, you know, Victorian London has been taken by dark forces down to the center of the earth, across the River Styx from hell. And, is surrounded by this vast underground, completely black sea. And so you play as a steamship captain that, you know, goes and visits the various islands. And, the actual control is of steering your ship is real time, but the combat is sort of a real time turn based. Sort of similar to an FTL, although without the explicit crew controls. And I don't know, most of it's you kind of play it for the story. So it's really well written, very interesting world building. I've been spending a lot of time carrying tomb colonists to the tomb colonies, mm-hmm. which basically what that is in the setting, since London is literally on the banks of hell, you can't actually die in London because you know, you just kind of, you know, take a quick swim across the River Styx and you're back in the land of the living.
Yeah.
So no one can die unless, you know, someone goes, you know, Breaking Bad on you and, you know, dissolves you in acid or something. But you still sustain injuries. So eventually if you have sustained enough injuries that you're, you know, no longer presentable to society, you're exiled to the tomb colonies. And so basically I'm making my money transporting people to their exile.
Yeah. So like the actual game itself, I mean, all this world stuff is really cool. Like, and that's what these, you know, this franchise kind of excels on. But the actual game is, you mentioned FTL. Like, I've heard it kind of compared to like the Yogg meets FTL meets like Oregon Trail, insofar as like they're like you have different choice nodes that are kind of informing, you know, like basically what you do at every time it, you know, presents you with, okay, this could go one way or another, and that there are systems backing that up.
Right. Basically, you know, as very basic, very basic RPG system. You have stats, and all of the like use of the stats is pretty much always like a direct check against the stat.
Right.
Well, I mean, with a random roll, but you know, it's you know, not like no substats or anything. It's just, you know, stat is a modifier.
Yeah.
And when you get to a port or something happens at sea, it's kind of Yogg-like, where it's, you know, here's this situation. How do you want to react to it?
Mm-hmm.
One of the interesting things is it tends to be a little bit like some of the old Choose Your Adventures, where often you have a certain degree to which it's not always literally, how do you react? Sometimes it's asking you what happens.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it might be a situation where it's like, you know, oh, a hooded, you know, you find a hooded stranger on your deck, and the you might choose like, oh, it's a nun. Oh, it's, you know, an assassin or whatever. Yeah. So sometimes it's more things where you actually kind of define the reality for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But so that's one of the gameplay. The actual controlling your ship, it's sort of Oregon Trail like. The big thing is anytime you're not in light, which basically means anytime you're not following the path of the light on a lighthouse or near a settlement or something like that, your character's sanity starts to slip.
Mm-hmm.
And if their fear gets to 100, they'll attempt mutiny. And if you let it get too high, even if you drop it back down, you'll begin to develop reoccurring nightmares.
Okay.
So, and that's kind of pulls in. It's basically like a Lovecraft like insanity mechanic.
Yeah. It's getting harder to avoid playing this game based on like your description of it, because it sounds almost exactly like something I desperately want. Can you speak to how early access it is? Because my understanding was that up until very recently, it wasn't randomly generated, like that,
right,
that there was like a right way to play it, which you couldn't find a quicker way to make me not want to play it.
Sure. What I'd say, My understanding is until I'd have to check in. Until recently, it wasn't. I'm not sure if this is gone put in, because it kind of uses a weird update system where you basically opt into each update, and that's how it keeps from just like, if it breaks your save files, well, you're not forced to update. So I have to check, but basically the islands were all in there. The location of the islands weren't randomized. The other big thing, though, was it's early access in that some of the economy doesn't quite work very well right now. And so when you say there's a right way to play it, I think a lot of that is because certain of the runs aren't fleshed out yet. Mm-hmm. So unless you do very specific things, it can very easily cost you more in fuel to run goods than you make in profit.
Mm-hmm. So there's nothing there. Like they haven't like applied a gameplay consideration to that spot yet.
Right, exactly. And I would say like the actual content is pretty much there, but it's just like I think they very explicitly haven't gotten to, okay, now we're going to look at the islands and set up like our strategy of who will buy what and who sells what. Mm-hmm. So like almost none of the islands now have a good that you can pick up for your return trip back to London. Mm-hmm. So, like, things like that.
Yeah. This sounds pretty great. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really a neat system. There's a lot of really interesting thought that goes into the writing. Very strong stance on inclusiveness in the writing. That's kind of neat.
You can be, like, you can be non-binary. If you so choose.
Yeah, you can be non-binary gender. What from Fall in London, one of my favorite, I don't know why, but just like mental images from the game is, I play a male character, but all of my charisma-inducing, increasing equipment happens to be like a dress and like stockings and stuff like that. So that's like when I'm trying to, be diplomatic or sweet talk somewhere, something that's, you know, what I'm outfitted with. I just have this image of this businessman, you know, well, honey, I've got a big, big sale today. I better go put on the power suit. He just comes down dressed completely in drag.
He says, I've got to make a tough sale today. Then turns on a boombox and like Goodbye to Horses starts playing. would you contract with me? Yes, I'd contract with me. Yes, so. I understand not every trans person is like Buffalo Bill. I want to make sure that everybody knows that that is just an off-color joke that I made and not an actual reflection on my beliefs about anybody.
But I mean, there's a lot of interesting things, you know, across the board, and you know, there's a lot of their discussion. You can find a lot of their discussion of it, like down to even like making sure that the interesting characters aren't all what you would actually see in a Victorian work of fiction. So, for example, their equivalent of Sherlock Holmes is awesome, and it's also a elderly black lady.
Nice.
So there's a lot of interesting thought that went into how they tell the stories.
Cool.
Neato.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm very happy to hear that. Like that comports with everything else I've heard about this game, and it's going to be harder for me not to hold on to it, not to give it a shot. Yeah, which like really all that says is Cole will buy it and then not play it. So, man.
So have you ever beaten FTL?
No, I haven't. Like that is a game that I am perfectly happy being bad at, right? Like for me, it's not about getting to the end. Like it's neat to get further because you see more stuff, but like I don't feel like diminished or frustrated that I haven't gotten to it, because the last boss for all intents and purposes might as well be impossible to beat.
I'd be interested, that's why I'd be interested to see, not so much the like combat, because this probably just wouldn't work, but I'd be interested to see like a Twitch plays FTL or something in terms of like, excuse me, the decision making aspects of it.
Hmm. Oh yeah, like taking a vote on, you know, do you take the crazy person from the planet in? Yeah. Huh. Oh, it's already on my wish list. Okay, cool. So if it goes on sale, I will get a notification. I'm going to bring us to a close, actually.
Hooray!
If that's cool. So let's button it up.
Go!
The credit. That was The Level, level number 78. Be more precise, let's make this quick. We have a time for the Portland Retro Games Expo Watch Out for Fireballs before we get into the actual, let's say, you know, admin for this show. I need to look up what that time is.
In the meantime, I have to give a shout out to LOL Farmer or Michael, because I told him I would do so because he was the first person to say, hey, I listened to you.
Yeah.
So thank you, Michael.
So it's going to be Sunday afternoon from 2:30 to 3:15. That is the Watch Out for Fireballs in Auditorium B.
Hooray.
Yeah.
I would be there.
I have no reckoning why they took us down to 45 minutes. Nothing else is 45 minutes. But there we go. We're going to try and make it the best we can. We're going to be talking about Street Fighter 2.
I know.
Yeah.
I want to be there.
Yeah. Prepare to just watch me be completely bad at this game. I've been practicing, and I am no good. I am no good, you guys. It is not in me, but it is interesting to talk about anyway.
So can you like tag team like a member of the audience?
Maybe.
somebody needs to record you guys playing for all the people who can't actually be there.
Man, I'd really rather that not happen. So if you are going to be in the Pacific Northwest, there are worse things you can do with your time on that Sunday afternoon than go to the Watch Out for Fireballs podcast recording.
Did you say Sunday afternoon?
Yes.
Or Saturday afternoon?
Sunday afternoon, yeah. Gotcha. Which I don't know why we're on Sunday, but oh well. What are we looking at here? Other than that, if you would like to support this show, you can like us on Facebook. It's facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. Leave us a rating or review in iTunes, please. I feel weird asking so much, but I shouldn't have to ask so much. let me see here. And then our Patreon. Yeah, you know what to do. So why don't we just throw it off? I've been Cole Ross, at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been David Moneysmith at Moneysmith777 on Twitter, and I still am.
I am almost always Dennis Guyden, except for when I'm David Guyden, also known as Jala or Jala-chan on Twitter, at on around Twitter.
Yeah.
It's like the preposition thing in the mountain, around the mountain. I've been Ben Merkel at Merkelizer on Twitter.
Yeah. And until next time, Thermonuclear Clippy says, hey, it looks like you're trying to play a game.